Hello. It's been a while. What has it been, a year and a half? Look at you. You look great. And for those of you who are new here, welcome. I'm Dominique Hodge, your host and the multimedia editor. This is Vox Voice, a podcast from your friends at Vox Magazine. You know the amazing people behind December Stuff Package? Yeah, that's us. Vox Voice is a podcast dedicated to hearing from the Columbia community about all sorts of things. We hear from business owners, music people, you name it. It's all here. Listening to their stories and learning something new about the place around us. And another thing, before we get started, this will be a little different from the past. I've made some creative changes to jazz it up a bit. See if you can spot them. We've got a great lineup this spring, and I cannot wait for you to see it or hear it. So let's go ahead and get started. For our first episode of the season, we have Libby Cowgill, an associate professor in the anthropology department at the University of Missouri. She joins us today to talk about what anthropology is, how it relates to the world of fitness, and her current research project, with multimedia reporter Abigail Zorin joining her. Here are Abigail and Libby.
Can you provide our listeners with like a brief introduction to anthropology?
Sure.
Nobody knows what anthropology is, so don't feel bad about that. If you're listening and going, I have no idea what that big long word means. That's pretty common. All it is the study of humans. And so there's a whole bunch of us out there who are looking at humans, human biology, human culture, human history, and trying to parse it out. And almost anything that studies humans falls under the rubric of anthropology, right? So archaeologists, those at least in the United States, are considered anthropologists. You could be a cultural anthropologist where you go off and study people's beliefs and customs, or you could be someone like me. I'm a biological anthropologist. My particular field, I usually study Neanderthals and early modern humans. I study a couple other things about how your body responds to exercise and how your body responds to climate. But biological anthropology includes genetics and studying primates and pretty much anything that is human biology through the lens of evolution.
So what specifically would you say led you to choose anthropology? Because it's not usually something that people are like, that's what I want to be when I grow up.
Yeah. So my house is weird. My parents are weird. While I was growing up, my parents, who are not anthropologists, I'm actually first gen, so they actually don't even really work in academia at all. They thought skulls were amazing. And so whenever we would be out like walking around or hiking, they would find skulls on the ground and they would bring them back. And like most people have cabinets full of like china in their living room, we at last count have 92 different animal skulls in my living room, all in china cabinets, all with like cool little labels with their binomial nomenclature, their genus and their species name like underneath them. Like my earliest memories of spending time with my father are sawing off the head of a rotting sea lion on a beach. And so when I got to college, I'm like, huh, bones are really neat. Maybe I'll, you know, what types of classes can I take that kind of tie into osteology, which is the study of bone? And I took an introduction to biological anthropology class, and it was all downhill from there.
So you kind of touched on your specific like area of expertise. What about it kind of fascinates you the most, or why did you decide to focus on that?
So my initial focus when I was going through grad school was Neanderthals. And since then, I've kind of branched off into a bunch of different areas that are sort of inspired by my interest in Neanderthals. Neanderthals are awesome because they are about as close to being a modern human as you can get without being a modern human. So I sometimes tell my students that it's kind of like looking into like a crazy funhouse reflection of yourself that's just a little distorted, right? They did all sorts of things that were similar to us. You know, they hunted, they lived in groups. They are very well adapted to extremely cold environments. So they lived in glacial Europe. They were super jacked, like we can tell, and I can go into that later if you're interested, from a variety of different reconstructions of their bones, that they were really, really muscular. They also were not like us. Like they didn't really make a whole lot of art. Right. So like all those beautiful cave paintings that you see in Europe and things, all those are made by modern humans. Neanderthals didn't seem to be super inspired to create that type of thing. So that juxtaposition, that oh, close to us, but like not quite us, was always really fascinating for me.
So you talked about that you are in like exercise sciences or the anthropology version of that, or how fitness affects the human body.
Sure.
Can you talk a little bit more about like how that works, or how that
dovetails with my research? Yeah, sure. So your bones are basically just like your muscles. If you do a whole bunch of physical activity, your body lays down more bone to resist the stress that puts on your body. And if you lay on a couch and are a giant couch potato your whole life, your body takes away bone. And once you know that, you can basically look at skeletons in the past and draw conclusions about what they were doing with their lives. It's one of the main techniques that we use in archaeology and paleontology to sort of reconstruct what people and other organisms did when they were alive. And that's how we know that Neanderthals were jacked. You probably have about 5 to 15% difference in the size of your upper arm bone, your humerus, right? And that's just from doing things with your right hand most of your life, right? So your right arm is actually like a little bit bigger. Neanderthals, their right arm was like 50% bigger than their left arm, right? So that would suggest, right, that they're doing something crazy with that right arm, right? We find in the archaeological record these 7-foot-long, like really heavy-duty thrusting spears, right? Apparently that's how Neanderthals hunted, right? And that could partially be why we see that huge difference in the size of one arm, right? Because if you're driving a stake into an animal, that actually takes a lot of power, right? So I started studying that originally, and that's kind of, it's dovetailed beautifully with my personal life. It was right around the time when I started weightlifting and sort of getting into powerlifting on my own, which I started doing when I was first in graduate school. It was first year of graduate school, so probably 22. So I guess I've been lifting for 20 years now. And eventually I became a CrossFit coach. I coach not very often, one class a week now. I'm at CrossFit Fringe down on Old 63. All these things are kind of interwoven in my life at this point, right? Thinking about how physical activity shaped the body then and how it shapes the body now, right?
So among all of your research projects, would you say you have a favorite or a couple of favorites, and why they fascinate you?
I'm loving what I do now, right? So I think I told you, so I started studying Neanderthals, and then things made me interested in other stuff, right? So I have this whole avenue of my research that's studying how bone responds to exercise throughout the lifespan, right? So I've looked at other like groups of organisms other than Neanderthals. But I also got really interested in how people survive in extreme cold and extreme heat because of the fact that Neanderthals were people that were living in glacial Europe, probably without, I mean, they had clothes, don't get me wrong, they weren't running around naked or anything, but like it wasn't, nobody had a North Face jacket, right? Like these were fairly uninsulated clothes, right? These were just kind of hides and things that were tied together. So what I do now is with me and a couple of colleagues have what's called a climate chamber, where I take people every summer and I put them in a very cold room, a very hot dry room, and a very hot humid room. And we measure a whole bunch of things about them. And what we're trying to figure out is if certain body shapes do better in certain climates. So we measure them. Neanderthals are just these big, stocky, short people. The best size reconstruction we have for like a male Neanderthal would probably be about 5'7" and 175 pounds of just solid muscle, right? And that's been predicted to be adapted for the cold, right? So typically when you see people whose ancestors come from colder climates, they tend to be kind of stocky and broad, whereas people whose ancestors come from like the equator tend to be kind of long and lean. But nobody's actually ever tested it, right? So basically I spend all my summers baking, freezing, and steaming people to see if their body builds, their body shapes actually influence like how fast does their metabolism run when they're exposed to this? How soon do they start shivering in there? Is a long, lanky person gonna start shivering before like a short, stocky person? So I've been doing that for the last 2 summers. I'll do it for the next 2 summers.
I know that occasionally you also work with law enforcement or get requests from law enforcement. Are you allowed to talk about that or explain a little bit about what
I think we can talk about that. Yeah. So that's not my, there's something called a forensic anthropologist, right? Which is why often people end up taking my classes, is because I think a lot of people are very interested in that. I am not one of those. However, when you live in a smaller town, it's not uncommon for either police or historical societies to bring you human remains, right? Or what they do is they bring you remains and they want to know if it's human, right? And there's very few people who actually have that skill set where you can give them a chunk of bone and they can definitively say, like, this is human or this is not human. And I'm one of those people. So even though that's not my real, like, area of research interest, I do teach a class on human osteology, and I can take a chunk of bone of almost any size and tell you whether or not it's human. And so that happens to me all the time, right? So most of my job in this area is honestly to say, no, I'm sorry, that's a pig bone. No, I'm sorry, that's a cow femur, right? But every once in a while, something will pop up where, you know, it's more than that, right? Maybe about 5 years ago, there was a house that had burned down maybe 45 minutes outside of town. And they didn't think that it was anything, but the guy who owned the house was missing for like 3 months after that. And so they're like, look, can you just kind of come out and pick through the charred remains of this house? And I, at the time, was teaching my osteology course, which is an upper division anthropology course where you teach students to identify little chunks of human bone, right? Which is mostly what you find. And so we packed up, we all packed up together and went out and started picking through this house, which apparently the gentleman who owned the house also had 19 cats. So just because you hit bone doesn't mean you're actually hitting, you know, human remains. Those could be the remains of one of, or more than one of the 19 cats that were trapped inside this house when it burned down. We did actually eventually find his remains, and it wasn't me who found him. It was one of my undergraduates.
Looking ahead, what would you say are some of your like personal slash professional goals for exploring anthropology? Or the connection it has to fitness? Because I know I saw you competed in a strongman competition
a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
that was a long time ago. Yeah. Now I'm basically just trying to hold on to all my joints, girl, to be honest. Like, don't break your knees. You're 45, kid. Although, you know, that ties into, you know, the one class that I do teach at CrossFit Fringe is a CrossFit class for master's athletes, and they are my joy, right? So this is mostly people who are doing CrossFit past 65. Again, I think there's a reason why this particular class speaks to me is because as you get older, people who are non-active tend to get something called osteoporosis, right? So their bones tend to weaken with time. And we know that the main way that you can fight this is not by taking calcium, not by drinking milk. It is lifting heavy objects and putting them down again, right? So stressing them just like muscles makes your bones stronger, right? So getting to teach these older people like how to safely be physically active into their 60s and 70s is just a dream, right? And that all just dovetails, you know, I don't think I would have been ever interested in this if I hadn't seen how incredibly massive Neanderthal bones actually get from their incredibly active lives, right? We know that physical activity, and this is another wonderful thing that comes out of anthropology, is that physical activity tends to really, really improve the way that you age, right? So when we look at hunters and gatherers or other extremely active populations across the globe, they live almost as long as we do. But what they don't seem to have is like this period of like kind of sickness and frailty towards the end of their lives. Mostly they live their lives and they go, and then they just drop dead one day without kind of a period of illness and fragility towards the end of their life, right? And that's all, some of it's probably diet. Some of it's probably not eating Big Macs 3 times a week. But a lot of it is these are people that walk 6 or 7 miles a day all the way up through their 60s and 70s, right? And so just anthropology in general, not even my research, has sort of informed quite strongly how I think about aging and how I think about what I want my future to look like. We have a lot of movies of ethnographies, which are, it can be either a book or a film where someone has sort of recorded indigenous people, often hunters and gatherers. And you'll see these people where their faces look like a normal face of like a 70-year-old. And then below the neck, the guy's got like six-pack abs. Like he looks like Brad Pitt from the neck down. And you're like, how did this happen, right? Like, I mean, if you look at their body fat levels in non-Western societies, that kind of dreaded like getting a little chunkier as you age, that is not inevitable.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We really enjoyed having you.
Happy to be here. It was fun.
That was anthropologist Libby Cowgill and Abigail Zorn on this episode of Vox Voice. Be sure to keep tuning in to Vox Voice for more perspectives from your Columbia community. I'm Dominique Hodge.